Good evening, everyone. The Book of Psalms has so much in it that will be so good for all of us if we will really pay attention and do some study of it on our own. Okay, let's start over here in chapter 3 of the Book of Psalms and verse 1. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. As you read through the Bible, you will see that the leaders of God and the people of God had enemies. And they had trouble from all sides sometime. There were people who would persecute them, who would try to kill them, who would chase them, who would rob them, who would give them all kinds of trouble, and God had to protect them and intervene and deliver them. And David had trouble continually from those who were jealous of him, who wanted to get back at him, who wanted what he had, who would try to undermine him, who would develop conspiracies and bring other people in on that and have agendas to somehow or the other, some way or the other, at some time or the other, destroy David. And so he looked to God all the time for protection and deliverance. Otherwise, he wouldn't have lasted. And that's what we have to do. We have to get to where we are going to look to God for everything, and the sooner the better, because as you know, if you're keeping up with world events and news, each day, it seems like things get a little bit worse, sometimes a whole lot worse. And over a period of time, it accumulates into being very serious. And even though right now we have relative peace, we know that the Bible clearly says that's not always going to be the case. We're going to have some tough times. We're going to have persecution and people falsely accusing us. It's very clear in the Bible that that's going to happen. It's happened before, it's going to happen again. There won't be any truth to it, but that doesn't matter. It won't be based on facts. It'll be twisted and it'll be distorted and exaggerated. That's the way it was. All you got to do is read about the early history of the New Testament church and you'll see. And Mr. and Mrs. Armstrong, of course, went through that, and the church has over the years. So when we read in here about David, King David, who was a mighty powerful man and had a lot of powerful men around him, asking God for his protection and help because the trouble was continually increasing in his life, we can think about that, and we can ask God to help us handle it the way he did. And we can realize it came on him, it's going to come on us to one degree or the other as we move on out toward the end. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there's no help for him in God. And now we see this word, Selah. What does that mean? And you see it from time to time. Well, I don't know that we can absolutely nail down for sure and dogmatically everything this word means. But the research I've done indicates that it just means to rest. It means pause. Part of it is that it is a music mark, which meant that the singers don't sing and the instruments play. Only the instruments play. In other words, in this particular psalm, as it was set to music, and it came to this point in verse 2, Selah meant, okay, the singers stay quiet and the instruments keep playing for emphasis. Now was a calm time of reflection. Think about what those words mean. It's tied directly in with Higgion, which we'll see a little bit later, and that means meditation. Many there be which say of my soul, there's no help for him in God. And then everything just quietens down and people kind of take a break and reflect on that. And the instruments keep playing, but the singers don't sing, in order to underline the importance of that verse. Verse 3, but thou, O Eternal, are a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of my head. Isn't that a wonderful blessing? Let's think about that. We're in his hands. That means we're insulated from evil, wicked men. We have to do our part. We have to be careful. We have to be cautious. We have to be alert. But we don't have to be paranoid, always looking over our shoulder. There's a verse in Proverbs that says, the wicked flee when none pursues, but the righteous are bold as a lion. How can we have that kind of confidence? That comes from being close to God, walking with God, following Jesus Christ, realizing that he is a shield for us. Around us. He insulates us. He takes care of us. If we walk with him, he's going to walk with us. That gives us an edge in terms of obeying God. Still have to be careful, But let's recognize that blessing. If we stay close to him in prayer and close to him in Bible study, and we obey him, what a blessing that is. And David knew that. Verse 4, I cried unto the Eternal with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. I laid me down and slept. I awakened, for the Lord sustained me. Do you know there's people who can't sleep because they're so totally fearful of the world and of what can happen? I've visited people in downtown metropolitan areas where when you knock on the door, you may as well get ready to wait while they unlock several locks on the other side of the door. Not just one lock, but you can hear them unlocking this lock, that lock, the other lock, that padlock, that chain lock, because they are fearful of people breaking into their apartment or breaking into their house. It's probably happened to them before. And we have to be careful too. We don't want to get careless. But when we realize that God loves us so deeply and we love him and our security is in him and we do what we can go in and lay down and we can go to sleep and just put it in God's hands. And that's what David said. I awakened, for the Lord sustained me. He took care of us. You go to bed at night, you wake up the next morning, another wonderful night where God sustained us and took care of us. That's the kind of life we've been called to. Verse 6, I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about, and thousands of them did. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you have smitten all my enemies upon the cheekbone. You have broken the teeth of the ungodly. That's some pretty rough words right there. We have to realize that David lived in a rough time. Some of the most cruel, horrendous warfare was fought during that time with swords and clubs and axes and battle axes and all kinds of weapons that just destroyed the human body. And he was used to seeing that. And he did see enemies have their face smashed in and their teeth knocked out and their cheekbones crushed. And some of them were his enemies. And so that's why he says, you have smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. You have broken the teeth of the ungodly. Various ways that that would happen. Sometimes it would be in warfare. Sometimes it would be from their own men. God could do it in many different ways, several different ways, in as many ways as he wants. Verse 8, salvation belongs unto the Eternal. Your blessing is upon your people. Now let's just sit back and think about that a minute. Let's meditate on it. Let's absorb those words. Let's internalize what was just said there. Let's appreciate it. Let's enjoy it like a nice, cool drink of water on a hot day, or a beautiful slice of wonderful food that we can just take time in chewing before we swallow it. That's what it means there when you read that word, Selah. It's a time to think, a time to meditate, a time to back off a little bit and have some calm reflection over what was just said. Now we come to chapter 4. If you get a little background to this chapter, you will see that this was an evening prayer. It doesn't mean that it couldn't be prayed in the morning or in the middle of the day or any time. But it seems that in this particular case, it was recorded and was an evening prayer of David. And as you read it, you'll see that that makes sense. Psalms chapter 4 and verse 1, hear me when I call, O God, of my righteousness. You have enlarged me. You have been gracious to me. You have enlarged me when I was in distress. Have mercy upon me and hear my prayer. See how David talked to God? We can talk to God the same way. Anytime, all the time. O you sons of men, how long will you turn my glory into shame? How long will you love vanity and seek after leasing? What does that mean, leasing? It means lying. It means falsehood. That's what that word means. And there's that word we've been discussing, Selah. But know that the Eternal has set apart him that is godly for himself. The Lord will hear when I call unto him. Isn't that something? So we couldn't earn this. We don't deserve it. And it's not that we are good enough for it to happen to us. It's because of God's mercy and the fact that he sees something in us that he wants to use. And he knows this is the best time to open our minds and call us into his truth. And that's what he's done. And look what it says here in verse 3. but know that the Lord has set apart him that is godly for himself. We're his people, his special people. We need to think about that. We need to pray about that. Not to get vain about it and all puffed up about it, but to be encouraged by it and strengthened by it. And it's true and it's the fact. It's not some kind of bucking up verse here. It's just the truth. And it's settling and it gives us peace and hope. But know that the Lord has set apart him that is godly for himself. You're mine. You are mine. I'm going to take care of you. You're my church. You're my child. You're my son. You're my daughter. You're my man, my woman. You're my children, my family. I've set you apart for me. My eyes are on you. I'm going to be with you. I'll protect you and take care of you and heal you and bless you and watch over you. You yield to me and surrender to me and stay close to me and obey me, and I'm going to do all that. The Lord will hear when I call unto him. Verse 4, chapter 4. Stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still. Selah. I'm sure you wake up in the morning sometime, and before you get up, you probably talk to God. And maybe at night when you go to bed, before you go to sleep, you probably get on your knees and pray to God, and you go and you get in the bed, and you haven't gone to sleep yet, you probably talk to God. He hears. He answers. He likes that. He's pleased with it. Stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still, Selah. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the eternal. We don't have animal sacrifices in God's church. That was under the Levitical priesthood. We're under the Melchizedek priesthood. So we don't have heave offerings and burnt offerings and peace offerings and sin offerings and any of those kind of offerings. But we do have sacrifices. And God is pleased with those sacrifices. And they have to do with the sacrifices of righteousness. Being thankful. Doing things that please God. Denying ourselves in order to obey him. Going above and beyond to help others and to serve him. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the eternal, David says, under inspiration of God. Verse 6, there be many that say, who will show us any good? Who will show us any good? Lord, lift you up the light of your countenance upon us. Let your countenance shine upon us. Let the light of your countenance shine upon us. Help us to please you. Grant us your favor, your love. We can pray that way. You have put gladness in my heart more than in the time that their corn and their wine increased. Look at this. Isn't this a wonderful verse? Psalms chapter 4 and verse 8. No money can buy this. No friendship, no connections, no political power and clout, no looks, no intelligence. How do you come about having what it says in verse 8? How can you put a value on it? It's so tremendous. And we can do exactly the same thing that David said he did. Look at this. In this troubled, dangerous, empty, hard, sick, and dying world today, look at what God offers his people. The same thing he offered David in the sick and dangerous and hard and dying world of his day. Psalms chapter 4 and verse 8, I will both lay me down in peace and sleep. For you, eternal, only make me dwell in safety. That's where the real safety comes from, Almighty God. I will both lay me down in peace and sleep. For you, eternal, only make me dwell in safety. Now we come to chapter 5. We're moving along. That's what we're going to do in these Bible studies. We're not going to just race through them, but we're not going to bog down either. We could stop on one or two verses and be here for the rest of the Bible study, but I want to move along. We want to go right on through and kind of get the feel of this book, the overview, the thread, the themes, and then we'll stop on certain verses to try to emphasize the point or points that we find there. That finishes Psalm chapter 4. Let's move along now to Psalm chapter 5. Now you'll see in this particular case that this is talking about a morning prayer. You saw where David talked about laying down and going to sleep in chapter 4, and that's why it's called an evening prayer. Well, here he's going to talk about waking up, and that's why it's called a morning prayer. Chapter 5 and verse 1. Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my meditation. Hearken unto the voice of my cry, my King and my God, for unto you will I pray. And he did. And he prayed many different times of the day and night. And he said, evening, morning, and noon will I pray to God 3 times a day. But he prayed at other times as well. We'll see David saying that he got up at midnight to thank God for his law. For unto you will I pray, verse 3. My voice shall you hear in the morning. See, here's a morning prayer. In the morning, God, you're going to hear my voice because I'm going to get on my knees and pray to you. My voice shall you hear in the morning, O Lord. In the morning will I direct my prayer unto you and will look up. He's telling God now, in the morning, this is what I want to do. For you are not a God that has pleasure in wickedness, neither shall evil dwell with you. The foolish shall not stand in your sight. You hate all workers of iniquity. Now let's explain that for a minute. What does that mean in verse 5? You hate all workers of iniquity. Well, we know that God loves people. They were made in his image. But it says here, he hates all workers of iniquity. What that means is he hates what they do, and he hates what they've become, sinners. He hates the sin, and he hates the sinners. This human being that's become a sinner, he hates what they've become, and he hates what they do, but he does not hate them and the potential that they have of one day being in his family. Let's balance that out by turning over here to John chapter 3 and verse 16. John 3 and verse 16, Jesus Christ said, for God so loved the world. See, he loves the world. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. So he loves everybody, but he hates workers of iniquity, meaning he hates their evil and their sin, and he hates the evil individual they become, but not them as a person and the potential that they have. And so he abhors evil, and he tells us to. So let's continue. For you are not a God that has pleasure in wickedness, neither shall evil dwell with you. The foolish shall not stand in your sight. You hate all workers of iniquity. Verse 6, you shall destroy them that speak leasing or lying. The Lord will abhor the bloody and deceitful man because he's bloody and deceitful. And he hates what they've become and what they do. But as a human being with the potential of becoming a wonderful individual in his family, no. He loves them in that sense. Verse 7, but as for me, I will come into your house in the multitude of your mercy, and in your fear will I worship toward your holy temple. What's our attitude when we come to church? What's our attitude when we gather with God's people? Whether we're there with 1,000, or with 5, or with 15. On the Sabbath, when we come together, we are coming to present ourselves before God. We're going to sing praises to him. We're going to pray. We're going to hear his word explained in a sermonette and in a sermon. We're going to fellowship afterward. And we're doing all of this to honor and please him and praise him. And that attitude has got to be there of coming before him in the right attitude. We dress with that in mind. We fellowship with that in mind. We talk with that in mind. We listen. We worship him. But as for me, I will come into your house in the multitude of your mercy, and in your fear will I worship toward your holy temple. Worship, you see. But we don't have a temple today. We are his temple. So we don't have to make a special effort to worship toward the temple or to include the holy temple in the way or direction we sing or look or anything like that. But we do have to keep in mind that God is on his throne in heaven, and we are coming before him, and we are cognizant of the fact that he is watching and he cares, and so we present ourselves before him on his holy throne in the third heaven. So in awe, in thy fear, in awe will I worship toward you, in other words. Verse 8, lead me, O Lord, in your righteousness because of mine enemies. Make your way straight before my face. Make it clear. I don't want to get into confusion and twist it around and have my life cluttered up and complex and hard to figure out. Make your way straight before my face, for there is no faithfulness in their mouth. Their inward part is very wickedness. Their throat is an open sepulcher. They flatter with their tongue. There's something about human nature and human beings. They like being flattered. And so you're always going to have people who try to use others by flattering them. They will flatter them. They will compliment them. They will just say all kinds of wonderful things to them, all to wear them down and put them in a position so they can get something from them or use them. There's a hook in flattery. There's a catch. It's being used to manipulate or get something from you. So don't fall for that. Now, a sincere compliment, yeah, that's encouraging. A sincere comment of appreciation, of course, that's nice to give that and nice to receive it. But when it starts to turn into flattery and it's just overdone and it's mushy and it's sugar-coated and it keeps on coming, you better be careful. You better watch out. A red flag better run up the pole and a little bell better start ringing in your head. What's going on here? What's the catch? I'm being set up. Be careful. They flatter with their tongue. Verse 10, destroy thou them, O God. Let them fall by their own counsels. Cast them out in the multitude of their transgressions, for they have rebelled against you. Teach them a lesson, Father, and don't let them destroy your people. Verse 11, but let all those that put their trust in you rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy, because you defend them. You protect them. You cover them. I can't say that enough. I can't emphasize that enough. I can't focus on that too often. You defend them. Let them also that love your name be joyful in you. For you, Lord, will bless the righteous, the people who try to do the right thing. I know it might sound like an oversimplification, and I know it might sound kind of trite, but it's not trite. And it's not oversimplifying things. It's just telling the truth. What all of us need to do on a regular basis when we're faced with a decision or we're faced with a dilemma or a problem or a crossroads is just ask ourselves this question. What is the right thing to do? And ask God to help us see what is the right thing to do and give us the strength to do that. It may be the hardest thing to do. It may be the most unpleasant. It may be the one that we don't want to do, but that's what will work out. If we do the right thing, we're going to end up in the right place every time. It might take a while or it might not, but it'll always happen. What is the right thing to do? For you, Lord, will bless the righteous. With favor will you compass him as with a shield. I want that to happen to me. I want it to happen to you. And it is going to happen if with God's help, we set out to do the right thing without getting vain about it and self-righteous about it and all egotistical about it. Well, that finishes chapter 5, so we'll stop there and pick it up next time. This is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.